Absolutely intercultural.
Fullständig tvärkulturell.
Absolut interkulturell.
Absolutamente intercultural.
Absolutely intercultural.
Welcome to Absolutely Intercultural. This is show number 110. My name's Anne Fox, and this show is coming to you from Denmark. First of all, thank you very much to Valentina Dodge for nominating the podcast and blog as one worth taking a look at. Thanks very much, Valentina, and now I just have to compile our own list of 10 blogs worth looking at. I'll be doing that in time for the next show, but in the meantime, you'll hear about one great nomination in today's show. Now, what were you doing last Friday? I'm asking because it was a special day for people interested in intercultural matters, and Debbie Swallow from the UK is going to tell us more.
Diversity in general. I thought that I would put up a website and ask people from all over the world to contribute on that day or around the day and give ideas of experiences that they've had in the different working practices across cultures.
Can you learn about intercultural communication from a book? We'll be hearing from the author of a new book who hopes that the answer is partly yes. What sort of content will it include?
Another aspect is, and courses that I've been involved in or organise, is working with a specific culture. So very popular these days, working with India, working with China, because those are the two big sort of outsource countries for manufacturing or services.
We'll also be hearing about the links between culture and social exclusion by eavesdropping on part of a webinar in which we learn of new metaphors for culture.
So what I've been trying to say so far is that it's time to abandon the idea of cultures as boxes that we can sort different people into, because most people wouldn't really fit nicely into any box at all and would have one leg in one box and the other leg in another box, or maybe they would feel very odd in the box that everyone else thinks that they should fit into.
So let's start by talking with Debbie Swallow in the UK.
Last Friday was probably an ordinary day for most of us, but actually it was quite a special day. Can you tell us what day it was?
Yes, it was UNESCO's World Cultural Diversity Day, and that takes place on May the 21st every year. And it's a day when we're supposed to think about the different cultures in the world and value diversity within the world. So it's supposed to be an awareness campaign, really.
So can you tell us what you decided to do?
Because I tend to work in a business background, but I am immensely interested in diversity in general, I thought that I would put up a website and ask people from all over the world to contribute on that day or around the day and give ideas of experiences that they've had in the different working practices across cultures, so that we can all develop cultural intelligence through reading some of the stories.
And when I heard about this, I thought you might get about 6 responses tops, but actually you got a really good response, and I think that the result is really worth reading. Can you just tell us the address, the website address?
Yes, it's www.theworldatwork.com.
Right, and that's really worth visiting. I was overwhelmed by how many posts you got in such a short time.
Yes, well, we're looking forward to even more, so it doesn't matter that the day has been and gone, because just over the last 2 or 3 days, it seems to have got a life of its own, and people are beginning to comment, which has been wonderful. And even yesterday, I got an email from a lady called, her name is Beauty, and she's from Botswana. She posted her comment up there, and that's a lovely story, and it's about how greetings are so important in Africa, especially in Botswana. So you can't just go up to somebody and say, oh, excuse me, could you tell me the way to whatever, or what time does the shop open, you have to give greetings, because it's a hidden message of saying, I respect who you are, I respect your value as a person, and I'm me as a person. And you go through all the niceties before you ask the question. And I thought that was fascinating.
Yes, it is. And there's lots of good stuff in there. There's personal anecdotes, and there's also a lot of background information. So it's a brilliant initiative, and thanks very much for thinking of that. And I think we should keep an eye on the blog.
It's lovely to talk to you, Anne, and I hope all your listeners will feel free to send in a blog at The World at Work.
I really do recommend a visit to the new World at Work blog, and you can find a link to it on our blog at www.absolutely-intercultural.com, where you can also leave a comment for us. Now, it's often said that you can't learn a language without culture, so it makes sense to bring out a book which helps you learn English through learning about intercultural matters. I was at the IATEFL conference in Harrogate in April, where I met Adrian Pilbeam, the author of a new book, Working Across Cultures, and I discussed it with him.
So the book is topic-based. How did you choose the topics that you were going to include?
Well, I've been working in the field of intercultural training for the last 20 years, in addition to my business English training background. And I really thought about the situations in which people are involved in international business, and where, for example, intercultural training might take place. I mean, a very obvious one is expatriation, people moving abroad. So that's one section in the book. Then we have things like working internationally in general, just which is the first section of the book, because that raises some of the key issues about particular qualities that people that may be desirable for people who are successful internationally. Mm-hmm. What are the key challenges for organisations working more internationally? Then another aspect is, and courses that I've been involved in or organise, is working with a specific culture. So very popular these days, working with India, working with China, because those are the two big sort of outsource countries for manufacturing or services. So that's another area, working with several different countries, just taking three as an example. And then another big area, very much in the news from time to time, mainly because they fail, mergers and acquisitions, international mergers. And the last section in the book is training and development, because, well, we're working in that area, and so that sort of rounded it off.
It was quite refreshing for me, actually, to see that there's a section on being an expatriate and coping with the experience as a family, because I don't think that's a topic that's often touched upon. It's usually about meetings and negotiations, so I thought that was quite refreshing.
Yes, well, the book is not dealing with skills like meetings and negotiations and so on. It's dealing more with the main topic area, or the main subjects for where intercultural skills are necessary. And yes, expatriation is a very big area, and particularly the family, because all the research that I've read about the success or failure of overseas postings show that it's the family, if the family are not settled, particularly the spouse, male or female, and their work is an issue. Can they work? Mm. Have they left a career behind to go with their wife or husband? And if the family are not settled, then the posting may well fail, and they come back early. So it's really important.
Yeah. So is it the intention that this book stands as some sort of intercultural training?
Well, I wouldn't go as far as to say that. You know, it's very fashionable to talk about sort of content-based language teaching. So there is quite a lot of content in the book, and indeed in all the six books in the series. Obviously, it's not a degree course in the subject, because it's not as deep as that. But it raises a lot of the key issues in the field, and with various activities leading in and leading out from the work on the text. There is a lot of opportunity to go into some depth into the field. At the end of the day, it's also a language development book, so there's a lot of key vocabulary for the in the field, which is covered, and there's a very detailed glossary of terminology connected with intercultural communication and working across cultures that will just help people talk about the topic. Mm. So that's perhaps another aspect to highlight.
The book is part of the Pearson Longman Market Leader series and could be a useful supplement to the main course text. Now we'll hear from Fred Dervin in Finland about why he was involved in organising a webinar about social media and inclusion and quite what this has to do with culture.
Yeah, so this is a European network which is called Language Learning and Social Media 60 Dialogues. And we have 14 partners from basically all over Europe, universities, but we also have media partners and some publications as well. So we have six key dialogues. The first key dialogue took place in Turku, at the University of Turku in Finland, where I work. And it was based on the topic of language learning, social media and social inclusion. And we had two speakers who were quite different. One of them is a specialist in new technologies or digital technologies and language learning and teaching, and the other one is so-called humanist, or, well, she's actually a specialist in religious studies, but she's done a lot of work on intercultural communication. So we put them together. They each gave a short talk about their views on the questions, and then we had some discussions. And I think that it worked pretty well. I mean, the fact that, they were not there to talk about the same thing, really. I mean, they were talking about the same topic, but from very different perspectives, and I think that they, you know, that gave, there was something interesting. And we have five key dialogues to go. The project is going to last about 2 years.
In her session, Professor Ruth Hillman from Finland presented us with some different metaphors for culture.
So, in my opinion, intercultural communication is not about crossing fixed boundaries between cultural monoliths, but it's about human value-laden communication. It's interpretation, identification, and change. So it's much more than just the culture A and culture B and how to get the message through all these cultural filters in between. It's much more of it's much more of a complex situation. I think this is very well illustrated by the social media. So what I've been trying to say so far is that it's time to abandon the idea of cultures as boxes that we can sort different people into, because most people wouldn't really fit nicely into any box at all and would have one leg in one box and the other leg in another box, or maybe they would feel very odd in the box that everyone else thinks that they should fit into. So it's very hard to also say what's sort of how to define a culture in the right way. I mean, who has the right to define what is the correct way of being Finnish, for example, or being French or being English? It's a hard question, and it's a value-laden question, and it's a question that is connected also to power in many ways. What are the challenges that I especially want to point out to today? Of course, there are many reasons why the box model for intercultural communication is problematic today. And because our time today, as we've seen, it's very much coined by movement, change, encounters. So there's a constant interchange of ideas, of images, ideas, values, and so on. Also trends, problems, influences, everything travels around the globe in a much faster pace than it did before. And the overarching phenomenon that we are facing up with here is, of course, globalization, which is a notoriously complicated word, and I think we can all give very different, put different meanings into it. I just want on a general level to say that we need to see that globalization includes both political and economical changes, but also when changes that comes to religion, culture, and especially popular culture. So the world is shrinking, we often say, and it's said that we are more interconnected to what happens in one part. Things that happen in one part of the world will have effects all over the globe. I mean, just like the Icelandic ashes that I think almost every one of us here had some connection to in some way. Either we were stuck somewhere, or we had a lot of friends who were stuck somewhere, or we in other other ways we're connected to it. So there's very few things today that are limited to just the country where we live or just certain culture. For example, the companies we work in, the kind of food we eat, the books we read, the films we see, everything of this is something that is distributed globally and really doesn't connect just to one culture or one country or just a specific language group that we belong to anymore. And this, of course, is also connected to the second phrase I wanted to take up here, which is, of course, mobility. And not just in the we're not just moving around the world in the social net. We're also physically people move around the world more than ever before. And this, of course, has different reasons. Some are driven by conflicts, by famine, by oppression. Others just go for an adventure, for fun, to have a better life, to get new job educations, for love. There's many different reasons, but the point is that mixing, immigration, migration mix is becoming the norm, and it's not even a very new norm anymore. Well, Finland is, I think, different here, but for example, if we take England, it's not a new thing. So the mobility here. When it comes to religion, the mobility question, of course, means that religions aren't connected to local places anymore, like to geography. We couldn't anymore say that Hinduism is the religion of India, for example, because Hinduism is the religion of London or the religion of Turku. It just depends on how you look at it. And politics often, when it comes to globalization, we can also see that many of the conflicts we see today have a global bearing. It's not just political questions are not tied just to one country anymore. You can just look at the war in Iraq or the conflict between Palestinians and Israelis. You can see that the whole world is implicated in this. We also have other kind of problems that have taken a global character, the economy, environmental issues. These are just some examples of how the world is interconnected in a different way. So when it comes to society and values, also, as I said, proximity isn't really a self-evident measure anymore. It's not self-evident that I share the values and ideas of the people who live in the same block of flats where I live, but I can very well have a very tied to the spiritual unity with people who live just on the other side of the globe. And here, of course, the social media come in very crucially, because they make possible new intensified patterns of identification that are not bound to space or to time.
In the preceding session, we heard about some problems in Second Life, the virtual world, where one of the things you have to do is to choose an avatar or representation of yourself, which you can then clothe according to your preferences. Professor Graene Connolly from the Open University in the UK explains.
In the Open University, we recently had complaints from our Muslim students who wanted ready-made headscarves because they found it offensive when they went into Second Life that the only default options of avatars they were giving were of American-style Barbie dolls. And, you know, there were... So it was a real kind of cultural issue for them in terms of the identity and the way they were set up.
Let's go back to Professor Hillman's session, where we move on from talking about boxes to something more flexible.
So am I then saying that social media really makes it possible for us to be everywhere all the time with everyone, as I'd said? Or is it now, you know, just up to myself to define who is my in-group and who do I identify with and so on? Can I just create my own culture? So, I have two images here. You know, there's a famous quote by a classical writer, John Donne, who says that every man is an island, you know. In the end, we're all alone and we just have to find our own way through life and define our own identity and so on. But I would say that it's really not true that every man is an island, because we're all part of a context, as we've just heard. We're formed by the place, the family, the culture we've grown up in. And it's... We're not forever separated from everybody else, because we are very much connected to the situation. But actually, I think the second picture is much better here. It's an image offered by the writer Amos Oz, who says that actually every man is not an island, but a peninsula. Because on the one hand, we're attached to a certain continent, a certain language, history, cultural background, and so on. But on the other hand, we have a coast open to the sea, to new influences, new encounters, new meetings, and so on. So, I don't know, do you feel more like islands or peninsulas? So my three recommendations now. I don't like to be normative, but these recommendations can hardly, they hardly deserve to be called recommendations. They are very non-normative. But how to look at and explore social inclusion and intercultural communication today with a critical eye that I think is open to new patterns and all the complex backgrounds that we've been talking about. So my first suggestion would be that, well, we'll try to increase our own awareness and what we call to think outside the box. Not to take the dichotomies, the categories for granted, but try to see the other side, to see new perspective, try out new things. And then the second is just to turn away around, you know, if we can't think outside the box, we can at least try to be aware that we are in a box and to see the limits of our box and be self-reflective and turn the eyes back to ourselves. And then for the third, I think this is very much what Ronja was into also, that we need to be expect the unexpected and be open for surprises. So this is really a trial and error thing that we need to not just be so very afraid to embarrass ourselves and do something that is wrong or use the wrong technologies in the wrong way, but try to make a more open and a more equal and more inclusive environment. So I think it's communication, it's the social. Both of these things, they very much consist in the end of human beings who can surprise us, can be different, can react to ourselves and be open to ourselves. So I think it comes down to a very interpersonal level, even if we have, even on the social net. And I have the volcano there to just have the unexpected. Yes, thank you. That's what I had to say.
Well, that's it for this show, apart from a few reminders. First of all, you can still vote for us in the European Podcast Awards, both on the German page and the Danish page. The link is on our website. Secondly, don't forget to go to the World at Work website and add your intercultural stories. And finally, don't forget that the next show will be brought to you by Laurent Borgmann from Germany on June the 11th. Stay tuned.
Absolutely intercultural.
Fullständig tvärkulturell.
Absolut interkulturell.
Absolutamente intercultural.
Absolutely intercultural.